Welcome back in to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. A little tardy here on a Monday, but regardless, here nonetheless, had some computer issues, but wanted to make sure I got the podcast to you in high quality form and bringing on a first time guest. I am so overdue at getting him on, and in fact, Goodman's really been giving me crap about being so late on this. So Dan Dockich, who is quite the personality and quite the commentator, former coach, but now he's the host of the Dan Dockich Show on 1070 The Fan in Indianapolis, if you're within range of that. And of course, he's now a color man for ESPN, coming to us from an airport, I believe. Dan, great to have you on. How you doing, man? And where are you exactly right now?
You know what, I'm sitting here at Gate 10 at Indianapolis Metropolitan Airport, headed to do the Indiana-Minnesota game tomorrow. So I'm perfect timing, really, for me. It's great.
Yeah, man. Well, listen, we can talk about hoops, and we're going to talk about hoops, but I have a feeling you still have some leftover thoughts and opinions to share on us on all things regarding women's fashion, because I noticed you just couldn't help yourself on Twitter on Oscar night here. You were kind of the star of Twitter in terms of college hoops personalities. I had no idea, man. You're so vested in this stuff, huh?
Well, yeah, but, I mean, these people are, like, paid. Like, what, Valentino and I don't know, whoever else these people are, they're paid to dress these women, and they were awful. I said on my radio show today, if you're going to a gala, I will take you and I will put you in the absolute perfect clothes for you. Like, if you've got big old arms, don't go sleeveless. I mean, I watch that and I get amazed. All these women are so proud about, you know, well, I'm wearing so-and-so, I'm wearing Gucci, I'm wearing, okay, great. But it was awful, and I felt bad for them. Simple, less is more, ladies, less is more. Not less clothes, but less drama, a little classy. You don't need a ruffle, you don't need something stupid on your head, you don't need, just keep it simple, it's easy. There's nothing hard about it. It was ridiculous last night, and I expressed my opinion.
Well, listen, there is some irony here, and for a coach that once went totally superstitious about 12 years ago and decided to wear his jacket inside out amid a winning streak. Do you remember this, Dan?
No. It wasn't inside out. It was backwards. What we did was we were on a losing streak. We had won the league the year before. A bunch of kids had left, and we were on a losing streak. So I'm driving home with J.D. Campbell, the SID, now at Indiana. He and I are great friends. And I'm like, man, we got to do something different. He says, all right, let's go turn it around. I said, what are you talking about? He says, look, let's just have everybody wear their clothes backwards. So the next day, we had a thing called Junior Falcons. We turned everything around backwards. And the next day after that, I had my players, everything backwards. So what was in front is now, you know, in the rear, in behind. And so we just did that. And I couldn't go out onto the court and not do it. So I wore my coat backwards, which means the back is in front and the front is in back, which really, ironically enough, is like a straight jacket.
Yeah.
So, I wore it that way for about the first 10 minutes, and I always took my jacket off. We won 6 straight and saved the season. Next year we won 24. So, you got to do what you got to do when you coach. And I understand fashion. The bad part is nobody has a picture of it, and I'm a little down because I would like that picture to put up somewhere.
Yeah, and that was my next question, is if you had a photo. No one has a photo of this thing, because I'd love to see just how you could pull that off. That's great. You know, what's interesting is you're obviously quite a character, man, and you've gone seamlessly from the coaching game to the TV and radio realm. But college basketball in general, I mean, there aren't a lot of characters these days, right? I mean, there are some. Don't get me wrong. There are a few guys. Campy at Oakland is a great one. Buzz Williams is a great one. But doesn't it seem to you, like 10, 15, 20 years ago, coaches were a little more laid back, weren't as afraid to tell a joke, just to be goofy, to be funny. And now, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, there are plenty of really nice, really great guys. But in terms of characters in the coaching realm, doesn't it seem like it's just a small handful relative to what it used to be?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that coaches are much more guarded now with their comments, and they have to be because everything blows up. I mean, it just does. I mean, between Twitter and blogs and, you know, whatever. I mean, everybody's looking for the next story. And quite frankly, and you know this, everybody's looking for somebody to screw up. So, yeah, I think so. But I also think that you have to be your personality, you know, and I'm not coaching. So, you know, I mean, I don't have any problem if a coach gets mad at me, that's cool. If a coach, doesn't get mad at me, that's cool too. Either way, it doesn't matter to me. And if, you know, on Twitter, I kind of go back at people just because that's my personality. So I always thought you got to be who you are. If you're not who you are, people see through it anyway, and you'll have a problem. So other than that, no, I agree. No, I totally agree. I completely agree with what you're saying about coaches.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And how now you say you got to be yourself, and that's all fine and good, and I totally agree with it. But was this a natural segue for you? I mean, to go from one profession to the next, and you kind of you seem to be a common a person who delivers commentary in a way where it's you kind of have free rein. You kind of say what you want to say, do what you want to do, and it seems you've kind of upped your overall, people are realizing more and more who you are, and you're becoming more known for being a commentator than you were a coach. I don't know if you're happy or realize that, but that's the way it's seeming to grow here, Dan.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you coach at Bowling Green, and we were good my first 5 years. I took the West Virginia job, left, and then we weren't so good. We had a number of things happen that I could complain about, but hey, bottom line is we weren't good. And then when you go to work for ESPN, and ESPN has been so great with me, Matt, to give me, I'm partnering with Mike Tirico or Dave O'Brien or Dave Pasch the other day. I'm doing the Big Ten game, which is the best league in the country right now. So, I totally get that people are, nationally anyway, far more, recognize me as being a commentator. And I don't have a problem one way or the other. I mean, so many people get caught up in things that are frivolous. I don't get caught up in who recognizes me, who doesn't recognize me. I would get more caught up in something like this. Like, I really criticized Bo Ryan for not fouling and John Beilein for not fouling at the end of a game. Well, as soon as the game was over, they'd bring Bo Ryan over to me and sit next to me and Bob was choosing. And, I'd ask him the questions. Because my feeling is if I'm going to say something about you on the air or to somebody else, and then I see you, and if I don't say the same thing to you in person, then I'm a punk. And I don't want to be, I've never been a punk. So I'm more worried about that. I'm more worried about, what I see in the mirror than I am about who recognizes me, who doesn't recognize me, and that kind of stuff. I've always worried about the mirror more than I have anything else.
Are there, I don't want to drift toward the negative, but I'm just wondering, are there any coaches that you've maybe had relationships sour with since you became a commentator and you weren't afraid to kind of be harsh and critical of what they've done, or by and large are most coaches, they kind of get the deal and they don't tend to hold grudges? Because I know there are some coaches that can and will hold grudges for things that people will even write, even small time fries like myself and others. If we write something and they don't approve of it, they can kind of hold grudges. You're a little, you're more in the fraternity, so I wondered if it was a similar thing or not.
No, and you know what? It's actually the opposite. My goal is not, I understand if you want to be popular, you can just say nice things about both teams and everybody likes you. But that's never been my goal. My goal is to say something that the coach can use to help a player. Now, and that's the feedback I've gotten from guys. Like, man, I heard what you said about so-and-so. We played it for him, or, we played that for our team. And that's the only thing I really pay attention to. Say nice things about, I'm doing the Indiana-Minnesota game. Say nice things about Indiana, say nice things about Minnesota. Everybody goes, he's a great guy. He's a great commentator. That's not real. And my thing has been, I'm going to look at this and talk the same way I would in front of a team and address the same things. And, I've never had one coach ever be upset with what I've said. I just haven't. I've had so many guys call me and say, man, that was great. I'm glad you said that. That really helped me out because it's the truth, and so-and-so need to hear it, or my team needed to hear it. So, no, it's quite the opposite.
Huh, okay. So you've been out of the game since 08. You're an Indiana assistant and then West Virginia Bowling Green for a decade, and then you were with Indiana for that really brief term. So it's been 5 years since you were out. That's a relatively short time frame, but since you've left, biggest difference from the game, 06, 07, 08 to now? Is there anything that's clearly changed? Obviously, a topic on this podcast and college basketball in general has been the sport is down, relatively speaking. There are offensive problems. Would you point to that? Would it be officiating? Would it be recruiting? Would it be something else? What's the where is college basketball drifting in the most accelerated way from where it was 5-6 years ago?
Well, I think in terms of kids, it's social media. Like, Twitter wasn't a big thing 5 years ago. Now it's enormous. So you know, how are you going to handle that? You've heard guys get criticized for having Twitter bans. Or you see a guy like Calipari that welcomes guys to Twitter. You've seen kids make mistakes on Twitter. You know, we had one in the Big Ten where guys criticized Tubby on Twitter and had to apologize. I think that's the biggest thing relative to handling your team. All the outside social things that they can get involved in. You know, used to be you didn't. And when I say used to be, I'm not talking 100 years ago. I'm talking about 5 years ago. You had to look at the kid's Facebook, you know, make sure he wasn't embarrassing himself. He would bring social media experts in to talk about Facebook, talk about interview process. But now Twitter has become a really big thing. And quite frankly, if you're going to be a coach, unless you're Coach Krzyzewski or somebody like that, if you don't involve yourself in social media or if you don't involve yourself in advanced statistics, then you shouldn't be hired. Because that's all a part of the landscape of college basketball right now. So I'd say those two things, advanced statistics, that a guy like Brad Stevens uses, a guy like John Gross uses, and I would say managing your team by Twitter. Refereeing's the same. Crowds are great, not great, whatever.
Yeah.
The game's the same. But those two things are huge, I think.
You sent up a little light bulb, a little flare in my mind when you said if you don't involve yourself in advanced statistics, you shouldn't be hired. So I'm definitely an advanced statistics guy. I think because I don't call them, I don't call them new stats. I call them accurate stats because that's what they measure. I mean, that's just it's empirical data, and we should embrace that kind of stuff. So, but are you of the opinion that you know going forward in this era of smarter basketball, smarter analysis, and understanding that there are ways, you know, obviously outside of that to evaluate, and coaches have done it for a long time and been successful. But you're saying, you know, at this point, if you're not at least willing to embrace the realism of points per possession and all sorts of other tempo-free kind of statistics, you really aren't qualified to be a head basketball coach in Division
I. I'm not saying you're not qualified. I'm just saying it'd be tough for me to hire you.
Yeah.
Because I want everything. You know, I want somebody that can stand in front of you know people and talk. I want somebody that can motivate. I want somebody that wants to be on the cutting edge of things. Look, you know. I don't know this, but I would bet you anything. Mike Krzyzewski, who's as successful as anybody, Brad Stevens, who's as successful as anybody, I guarantee you Krzyzewski uses it. I guarantee you. I know that Brad uses it.
Right.
And I know that Tom Crean uses it, and they're number one in the country. So, yeah, I'm not saying you shouldn't coach, it would be hard for me to hire you, because if I'm going to hire in this day and age, there are so many guys that are qualified. There are so many guys that have recruited, so many guys that have made the jump, you know, from whatever to assistant coach on the road can really speak, can really. But if I'm hiring, you better have everything. And I don't want to hear, you know, the old curmudgeon, well, you know, I don't do email. Okay, great. That's good. Good for you. Go do something else. Because if you don't stay up with the times, then you're behind the times and you can't have that. So, no. I'm not saying you can't get hired. I'm just saying I would hire you.
Yeah, I get you there. What about this in terms of overall coaching? And we'll get to some current, you know, state of some teams and stuff in just a sec, but I wanted to ask you this. You know, I've talked with some colleagues about the overall state of coaching in college basketball, and there's a lot of micromanaging, but there's also a concern that going forward over the course of the next decade, the guys that get the good jobs, whether it's top assistant jobs or even graduate to head coaching jobs, there might be a slight erosion or degradation in overall coaching, because what's happening right now is there is a premium on guys that are able to get in and recruit, obviously, and get the right kind of guys to get in their circle, to get these guys into the program, get the athletes. And so whereas 20 years ago, the guy that would get the job would clearly be a basketball mind that had paid his dues, really smart guy, now it might seem like with more regularity, a guy who is able just to be a really good recruiter. You know, that's how he made it into the business, and he'll get the associate head coaching job, maybe ultimately the head coaching job. Do you feel like we might be drifting a little much too toward that, or is that perhaps an overestimation?
No, I think we already have. Okay. I mean, I do. I mean, used to be a guy who got an assistant job. Now, the guys that were assistants when I played at Indiana 1,000 years ago were former really good high school coaches, and it's absolutely gone towards recruiting. I mean, without question in my mind, that it has. I don't know whether that's good or bad. And well, I'll tell you where I think it's bad. Most teams, and Matt, you see enough basketball, you'll understand what I'm talking about with this. Most teams run the same offense, ball screen, roll, replace, whether it's on the side or whether it's in the middle of the floor, dive the screen or pop a guy in it. I mean, everybody runs the same garbage. And if you have really good players in it, like they do at Michigan with Trey Burke, who can really play out of a ball screen, they're going to be really good. Nobody's really innovative in college basketball. And I don't know, you know, I coached AAU basketball, and I coached it for 4 years at a pretty good level. I mean, whatever the highest level is, that's where I coached. And I will tell you this, I was a little bit surprised at how organized some AAU guys are. Obviously, there's clowns. There's no question about that. But there's a lot of guys that are organized. There's a lot of guys who run good stuff. There's a lot of guys that are high school coaches or have been coaching AAU for years that run really good stuff. So I'm not necessarily putting everybody into a lump, but I would say this. The innovativeness of offense in college basketball is nil. Like, Indiana is, in my opinion, smarter than anybody because Crean, they get down the floor fast. He recruited to this. He recruited shooters. They get down the floor fast. They rarely, unless they have to out of a timeout or dead ball, set anything up. I mean, they have their organization in secondary break. They set a ball screen, or they throw it ahead and go ball screen him, or they throw it ahead, immediately penetrate, skip it to the next. They keep the defense on their toes. And so many teams now do the exact opposite. You know, they hold on to the ball, run the little nonsense ball screen stuff, get the ball to a point guard, spread it out, end your shot clock, run 1-4 flat or 1-4 high, whatever it is. The next thing you know, you got a game in the fifth. And that, to me, is killing college basketball. I said on Twitter a couple weeks ago, man, somebody go get Loyola Marymount tapes from the early 90s, run that offense, play a little bit of defense, care a little bit about defense, mix up your defenses, and you'll win a ton of games in college basketball, because if you can get in the 70s, you can win a ton of games. So that's how I look at college basketball. And I don't know if that's a function of, you know, who's coming into coaching, but there's no question that the landscape of coaching in college basketball, particularly at the assistant level, is different.
Yeah, I agree. You get a team that's got some swagger and a confident swagger, an embraceable swagger, that can score high 70s, low 80s on the average, and make an Elite Eight and a Final Four. That team's going to be a star team, whether they win it or not, just because college hoops needs it. But before we move on, ultimately, why is there this kind of groupthink, Dan? Why do we have so many teams that are just running this stuff? Because it's not ultimately, I mean, we aren't seeing a pattern of ultimate success with it, right? I mean, a lot of coaches seem to be micromanaging like this. Why are so many doing this? I understand in so many sports, it can be a copycat. We see that specifically in the NFL and how it can see one scheme and take it to the next. But I would think in basketball, we would have a wider variety of styles. And I feel like we did long ago. And now it's just, I don't know, the game is getting smaller and smaller. I don't get why there aren't any more. And it shouldn't even be renegade coaches. We should just have more experimental coaches who are willing to do different kind of things. Why is that not the case? Why is 4 out of 5 coaches running the same kind of stuff in 2013?
Because I think what you said in the middle of that, it's a copycat deal. Years ago, when Coach Knight was running motion and winning, a lot of guys tried to run motion. And then the flex came into play. And I'll never forget this. I'll never forget being a player and then immediately into being a grad assistant. And you had to know how to flex ran because so many teams were running back screen, down screen, flex offense. And then box sets came into play because that's what Roy Williams started winning at Kansas with box sets. Screen to screen, dribble away, double down, all this kind of stuff was in play. So things become copycat. And it's amazing to me. It's amazing to me that this has stayed that long. I'll never forget this, Matt. I was in my office at Bowling Green, I don't know the year, maybe 2004, 2005, whatever it was, and Bob Hill, who was a longtime coach in the NBA, was coming to speak for me at a fundraising dinner. He's a Bowling Green grad. And we're sitting in the office talking hoops, and he goes, Dan, I'm just telling you, man, you better learn how to defend and play the ball screen because that's all basketball is going to be. Because that's all the pros are going to be. That's all we're getting to in the NBA is ball screen. And I'm like, yeah. And sure enough, he was right. So, you know, it is a copycat deal. It is. And unfortunately, I really believe this. I mean, I think there's only about 4 or 5 teams that can win national championship this year because there's only 4 or 5 teams that can really score. And you're going to see upsets in the first couple rounds of the NCAA tournaments. And you're going to see them in the 50s. You may see 1 or 2 in the 80s. I don't know. But you're going to see a lot in the 50s. Because when you score in the 50s,
right,
hell, everybody can score in the 50s. You, me, 3 cats, and a dog can score in a damn 50. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I could be dead wrong. I really could be. But I don't think that I am.
Let's turn and look at the current state of what we got there at the top. Now, you call a lot of Big Ten games, but are you relatively down on the Big Ten in relation to everyone else? Everyone's saying, you know, clearly the best league. This is a really good conference. You know, it's capable of sending three teams to the Final Four, the best it's ever been. You're not on that same page, right? I feel like I've heard and seen you be critical of this league and just saying, you know, let's hold up here. And I know you like Indiana, but am I wrong in this? Are you just kind of trying to temper everyone a little bit when it comes to that league?
No, I think Michigan State, I like the way Michigan State played yesterday. I didn't like it. I think Michigan State, Michigan, Indiana can make the Final Four.
Okay.
I do. And I think those three could probably win national championship. Not if Michigan State plays with the lack of energy I saw them play with yesterday. But here's the deal, Matt. I'm watching Indiana take on Michigan from 19, I think it was 92. It was either 92 or 93 when the Fab Five was there.
I saw, God, how awesome was that game? I saw it on TV.
Yeah, there's 10 pros in the game. There's 10. Like, you know, people remember Eric Riley played for a long time in the NBA. Brian Evans for us was a first-round draft choice. He was a Big Ten player of the year, and he barely played. There's 10 pros in that game. And that didn't include the big dog, Jimmy Jackson's group. I mean, there's pros all over the place. So we jump up and we say, well, this is the greatest group ever. And it may be. I don't know. It may be. It may not be. But I know this, to just blindly say, well, this league is better than it's ever been. I think the coaching is better than it's ever been. I remember going to the MAC in 97 and thinking after a year, damn, the coaching in this league, there was Bob Donowell, Charlie Coles was in the MAC. I'm thinking the coaching in the MAC is better than the coaching in the Big Ten. I really believe that. And I think the coaching right now in the Big Ten is phenomenal. I think the scouting is ridiculous. I think there's good players. And I think the development of players is good, but I, you know, 89, two teams went to the Final Four and we won the league. We weren't one of the teams. We won the league by two games, and Iowa, which came in about fifth, had like B.J. Armstrong, Gamble, who played in the NBA, Lohaus, who played in the NBA, Roy Marble, who's the all-time leading scorer in the history of the school, bunch of guys, and they came in like fifth. So I just have a hard time blindly going along with, yeah, it's the greatest league's ever been because there's a bunch of teams in the top 25.
I get you. Okay, so you mentioned five or six teams capable of winning the title, and you've given us three Big Ten ones. Who are the two or three other ones that you think can win it?
I think Louisville's got a real shot if they can, you know, because Siva and Russ Smith can go beat it. I think, no, one guy can beat his own team. And they also got a guy that can protect the bucket, and Chase Bahannon. Pretty good. I think their team is capable. I'm not 100% sure one way or the other on Gonzaga. I like them a lot, but my concern with Gonzaga is they went into Butler and got beat by Butler without Rodney Clark. Now, you got to understand Butler at that time. At that time, they were so reliant on Rodney Clark, and yet they went in and got beat. I know it was a bit of a fluke, but they got beat, and the championship team wins that game. I like Georgetown. I liked them when I saw them in person way back in November, get beat by Indiana in overtime. I think that they're a team because of the combination of a star player in Otto Porter, the system that they play. They seem to have found something since Whittington's been gone. They're like 11-1 without him. I kind of like that team. I want to like Kansas. I really do. I want to say, man, and I want to like Florida. But here's my deal. When people say to me, well, I don't believe in the eye test, well, that's cool. All that tells me is you don't know what the hell you're looking for. I mean, I lived in a film room for basically 25 years. That's all I did. So, I if I don't know what a good-looking team is from a bad-looking team, then, you know, what the hell have I been doing? So, I just don't know on Florida. I want to like them. I just haven't seen them play well. You know what I mean? So, everybody tells me, well, this team, okay. But, Matt, since 1990, since UNLV won the NCAA tournament, do you know how many non-blue blood great programs have won the NCAA tournament since then?
I mean, it's
none. Zero.
You want to say Arkansas? I mean, I wouldn't consider Arkansas a blue blood, right?
Oh man, I would. Well, maybe okay.
They were rolling.
That's an SEC team that was number one in the country.
I love that 94 Hog team. I'm just saying I wouldn't consider them a blue blood overall. But hey, you're right. I mean, listen, you go through it.
They get 25,000 people. They get 25,000 people into their place. I don't disagree with you. Like I'm not totally saying you're wrong on that. Okay, that's one.
Yeah, I know. And then I'm just, you know, I'm going through. Then you got obviously Kentucky, Zona, Kentucky, Duke, UConn, Michigan
North
State,
Carolina.
North Carolina. I'm just going through all of them here. And then, you know,
Florida.
Florida's not a blue blood. They won back-to-backs, but they're a really good team, obviously, in that realm. But you're right. I mean, you're just talking about, in general, powerhouse schools.
Right.
They're always the one that win it. And I agree.
Right.
But how about Duke and Miami, the two ACC teams who are both vying for number one?
Yeah, I forgot to mention Duke.
So you think Duke Kelly?
Yeah, definitely do. I think Duke and Indiana – could win every game in the teens in the tournament if Ryan Kelly comes back. Like, I thought Ryan Kelly, when he went out, mm-hmm. and Christian Watford and Adrian Payne were the three biggest ifs in college basketball in terms of the NCAA championship. Like, Watford, to me, when he's playing really well, Indiana's a national champion. When Payne plays really well, and it doesn't have to be numbers. It just has to be guard different spots, do different things, block shots when the opportunity to score inside, hit a jump shot or two. It doesn't have to be like 20-10. But and then Ryan Kelly, when I saw Ryan Kelly bringing the ball up against pressure for Duke, I'm sitting there thinking, holy cow, is this dude good? So I think if he comes back before the end of the season and has any time, he's supposed to be back last week of the regular season is what I'm hearing. Jay Williams told me that today. Then I think there's a real shot here for Duke. I think Duke's second best team in the country or 1A with Indiana with Ryan Kelly healthy. Now, you know, ifs and buts, raisins and nuts. Every day would be Christmas. That kind of old fat man deal. But I don't. That's a team that I absolutely think can do that. Yes.
We've got a couple more minutes here, then we'll wrap up. Give me one or two teams under the radar, in your opinion. You know, teams that might be a 7, 8, 9, 10 seed, but have Sweet 16 potential.
I don't think there's any question St. Louis does. I mean, I've been saying that since I saw him beat the absolute tar out of Butler the first time. I mean, and Jimmy Cruz is a great coach. I mean, I know he struggled or whatever late in his years at Evansville. He's not a good coach, man. He's a great coach. And everybody in college basketball knows that. The other team that I like, just because I did a couple games last year and fell in love with their style, man, is VCU, man. I just think they're good. Like, I think their style is so hard, and they believe so much in what they do. Like, we saw with Dayton. You know, they're struggling, but they're never out of it. If you relax for 2 minutes, they go on a run and they kill you. So those are two teams that I like Butler for a while, but it's been a hard season. We had Eric Fromm's dad died, Andrew Smith was out, Rodney Clark was out. I think if they get it together, they can make a run, but I can't say that right now as I sit here.
Yeah, you know, VCU kind of taps into a little bit of what we talked about before, although it's on the defensive end. You know, they've got havoc. They've got an identity. They've got a system they use, and they thrive off of it. And the game is better for having teams that have this kind of stuff with a name that's actually good.
Right.
And, you know, VCU turns people over more than any other team in the country. And when they can hit their threes, they're good. I'm interested to see what they are. The A-10 in general, though, I mean, they've got some good candidates there between VCU, Butler, and St. Louis. You could have three legitimate Sweet 16 teams there. I think that'll be pretty interesting. We'll see going forward. I'll wrap it up here, and I don't know, as we head into conference tournament play and NCAA tournament play, you got any good stories you want to share from your coaching days this is a podcast PG-13. That's, you know, if you want to flirt with the R rating, I'm cool with it. But is there any, like, a travel story or anything, you know, a player missing the plane, any good story from
I'll
your
give
previous
you two.
Years? All right, go ahead.
I'll give you two. One is a player thing. And I don't know why Coach Knight ever did this. Never saw him do this before. 91, we're playing, and maybe you've heard of this. I never have. We're playing Kansas in the Sweet 16. And we're like number, I don't know, something in the country. I don't know if we won the Big Ten or whatever we did. And all of a sudden, man, after warm-ups, Coach Knight makes everybody take a shower.
Okay.
And I'm like, what the hell are we doing here? And our doctor looks at me and goes, Doc, you think this is all right? And he said, how do I put this right? Never mind. I'm not going to even say it because it's not an X-rated show. But that stunned me. And then I missed the bus after we won the championship in 87, man. Me and Murray Bartow. I stayed out way too late. Ended up in a chair throwing contest with Craig Sager somewhere in New Orleans. And next thing you know, man, the phone call is like at 8 o'clock. Hey, the bus, you know, you got to come down. Murray was my roommate. We slept slap, slap. Heck, I didn't know. And all of a sudden, a manager comes in, and I got the phone wrapped around my neck. Hell, I'm a mess. And we got to run downstairs, get our stuff, run downstairs. And Knight sees us, and we come around the corner, and he tells the bus to leave. And my bag hits a bush or tree or something. I go wiping out across the damn sidewalk. So then I look up, and there's Alford and these guys laughing at me, you know. So I tell a cab driver, I say, hey, man, I'll give you $20 if you beat this bus to the airport. I'll give you 20 extra. So he whips around, beats the bus. I got on the plane. Knight tried to kick me out, but I wasn't going. And I ain't getting off, because if I got off that plane, I was never getting home. I was too much of a train wreck after the night after the national championship. So that's about all I got.
Was it like a good mood thing? Like he wanted to get you off, and it was just kind of playful, or did he really think he was close to kicking you off that plane, and you were ready to throw down?
There was two planes. There was a plane with the team, and then there was a plane that had coaches, and he was on my seat was on the second plane, and so he sent a manager to tell me to get off. Because he was on the other side, man, I don't care if I never coach a day in my life. I don't care if he shoots me. I ain't getting off this plane. So you do whatever you want. Well, you know, managers are all panicked. Royce Waltman and all these coaches are like, dang, you got to get off the plane. I don't care. I'm not leaving. There's not a chance in hell I'm getting off this plane. There's no way I'm moving. So I got back, and, you know, no big deal. I had a great time. But that's about it for me.
That's good stuff, dude. Listen, I look forward to crossing paths again sometime in the coming weeks. I doubt you remember. When we actually first met at the Final Four in Houston, I met you at, like, this party at, like, 1 in the morning. You were talking with some other people. But I was like, hey, man, what's up? And you were just, you know, you were the life of the party as usual. So hopefully I'll meet you in a capacity like that again. But you can follow Dan on Twitter at Dan Dockich. And, dude, I really appreciate you coming on. This was good, some good podcasting. We will do this again soon, too.
Anytime you need me, I'm here. Thanks for having me on, Matt.
All right, appreciate it. We'll be back with the Wednesday show, Parrish and Goodman. So look forward to that. We'll talk to you soon.